Welcome to the Watch Your Mouth podcast, a podcast about phrase etymology and why we say the things we say. I'm Milo.
And I'm Dave.
Put some stank on that one. He's my dad.
I gotta mix it up. And she is my daughter.
That's how that works.
It really is. So, Milo, yeah, I just wanted to start out a little bit differently today. I don't know why, just because I'm Dave. Yeah, that's right. I am going to issue an apology of sorts.
It's about time.
For many different things. I'm not going to be able to cover everything. This is not that long of a podcast. We need to keep it down. But the one thing I am going to apologize for is that we have billed this podcast as one where we look into the origins of idioms. Milo, you've done a pretty good job of, you stated that pretty closely, as do I.
At times.
But and like your last episode was, you kind of got around to an idiom.
Yeah,
but
I found it in the end.
It wasn't really about an idiom at all. It was an interesting ride.
And, it's about the Carfax we learned along the way.
Yeah, definitely. But we have billed this podcast as one of looking up the origins of idioms and why we say the things we say. That is mostly what we do. But, you know, like I said, we get away from that sometimes where we talk about why witches ride brooms or surprisingly erotic answer. By the way, you should look that up. Or we talk about which side of the road to drive on, or Chef Boyardee or Colonel Sanders, all great episodes. Please listen to them. But in order to make up to you, dear listener, and you, Milo, for the times I have deviated from that structure, I'm going to cover a few different phrases in one episode once again.
Making up lost ground.
I am a little bit. So there's a commonality here, though, because sometimes I've done kind of different topics. There was a time I did three different topics over three different episodes. They weren't really related at all. I just kind of pulled them out of a hat. Today's episode, though, we are going to have all the same. The topics mean the same thing. They're different ways of saying the same type of phrase.
That's fun.
And the phrase, what we're going for, is something that means the entirety of something or all of it.
Okay.
Can you think? You could probably think of a few different ways of saying. That's what I'm referencing everything. It's this.
Can you think of any caboodle?
That's one. Do you have any more?
That's a fun one. The whole nine yards.
Whole nine yards is not on my list, but I think that's a whole separate episode.
Okay.
Is the whole nine yards, because there's a number of different stories as to where that came from. So yeah. Do you have any more in your
I know there's a lot of them.
Well, here's the four we're gonna do today. And you definitely mentioned a couple of good ones. So the whole kit and caboodle was the one that got me going on this.
It's very whimsical.
Yeah, it is. And I as I was looking at the list of phrases that we want to go over, that's the one that jumped out. I'm like, I have no idea what the whole kit and caboodle means. And it sounds nonsensical. Mm-hmm. So where did that come from? But I didn't feel like there was enough for a full episode. So then I got the idea of, well, what there's a whole bunch of other phrases like this. I'm going to look up some of those as well. These are the four that I've chosen. Okay. You're going to find out about these four phrases. Number one, the whole kit and caboodle. Number two, the whole shebang. Number three, the full Monty. Mm-hmm. And number four, the whole ball of wax.
Right.
Those are our four different idioms. And if you're on board for that, listener, then just, keep listening.
Buckle pretty up, buttercup.
That's right. So Milo, of those phrases, which one do you think, which one are you the most familiar with, and which one are you maybe have used the most in your lifetime?
I feel like the whole shebang is maybe the only one I've said non-ironically. Like, I'm pretty sure I've said the whole kit and caboodle before, like in a playful way, but like, I'm pretty sure I've said the whole shebang, like just straight off. I feel like that one's not that weird.
And you think of it, though, the word shebang doesn't exist, and it's not a word anyone uses outside of this one time.
You can't have just part of a shebang. You have to have the whole shebang or none at all.
A partial shebang. It's kind of like eating cold McDonald's French fries. There's no point. What's the point? You can't do it. They're inedible. You can't have part of the shebang. So those are the other one. The other word, this is not in my notes. Another word that is almost always used in a very specific way is the word belated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wishing you a belated birthday. The word belated, I don't know if I've ever heard it used in a phrase outside of happy belated birthday. Have you?
Yeah, or just any like holiday, because you could say like happy belated Christmas kind of thing. But yeah, you can't say like this bill is belated or something like that. You
know,
like
everybody's like, I know what you mean, but that's a weird way to say that.
Yes.
All right. So that was an aside.
I wonder there's a word. I'm sure there is a word for words that are only for one circumstance.
Really specific. I trust in you to look that up for us.
I will do some research.
So today we're going to start with the oddest one, and that is the whole kit and caboodle. And again, like I said, it caught my attention. So again, we start to do some research, start to look into it a little bit. And I found out that first off, the word kit is actually a Dutch word.
Yes. Well, yeah. And it's not kit and caboodle. It's kit and caboodle, just to enunciate for people, because I don't know if that's used outside of the US, and with our Midwestern accents, we tend to run these things together. So kit and caboodle.
Correct. And that you're right. And that is, you're right in both senses. It is an American phrase. In fact, okay. I think for those of you listening outside the United States, kit and caboodle is an older phrase. We don't use it a lot, but it is kit and caboodle. And it does mean all of something. So
nothing
yeah,
to do with kittens, sadly.
No, sadly, it would be a much better phrase if it had to do with kittens. But kit, as I was saying, is actually a Dutch in origin. They don't exactly know where it came from. It's a very old word, but the earliest records say it meant a wooden tub or a jug. And then it started to switch over to be used for other containers. It eventually became tied to a soldier's pack.
Mm-hmm. I want to know how I knew that.
I do. Yeah, for sure. Did you know that?
I did, actually, because of a very popular doll franchise from my childhood called American Girl Dolls.
Of course.
My sister had they were these dolls that were about different American young women from history, fictional ones, but just to classify like different periods of American history. And the one for the Depression was named Kit, which is one my sister had. And they talk about where she got her name from, and she was named after a soldier's kit.
Oh, was her dad a soldier?
I think so. It's been a while since I've read those books.
It was an illicit affair. it's the American Girl doll with a really sordid past in history. That's what I want to be true. Anyway, so kit, pretty easy. It wasn't hard to figure out where that came from. Now, caboodle, which is, the real star of this phrase is, in kit and caboodle, caboodle's the star. Caboodle comes from the word boodle.
I don't know what that means.
Which sadly, obviously, has fallen out of usage because I had no idea that boodle had been a word.
It sounds a little naughty.
How, in what sense? Could you give me an idea?
It kind of sounds like booty.
Booty?
Well, look at the boodle on her.
Look at her boodle, you know what I'm saying?
On those gams.
You look up those games, you see that boodle? Yeah, I'm so sorry, everyone. Anyway, we do a lot of apologizing. So we have some debate on the origins of the word boodle. I was looking on a couple of different sources.
I would love to sit in on those debates. Go on.
Yes, you'd be bored. According to the online etymology, boodle might come from another Dutch word, which is B-O-E-D-L-E, boidle or boidle, which means property. So that's what the online etymology dictionary said. Or according to the Dunkirk Observer Journal from September 1888, it comes from the old English word bottle, B-O-T-T-E-L, which meant a bunch or a bundle.
Interesting.
And as you've already alluded to, Milo, these have been fierce battles and many lives have been lost in these fights over where boodle came from. But there's a truce now. It has been pretty peaceful.
Okay.
So The question I have for you is, who do you trust more, the Online Etymology Dictionary or the Dunkirk Observer Journal, New York, from September 1888?
I mean, the Dunkirk thing more? Sounds more official, but doesn't it, though? I have to say I don't know much about either institution.
But I'm going to go with you. I think I'm going with the Dunkirk Observer Journal from 1888 because it was more the Online Etymology Dictionary. I did some research and I found out they didn't have online anything in 1888. There was no internet, apparently, which it was a dark time, but they survived. So the one thing we're going to find out about all four of these phrases is there are, I'm just going to give away the ending now, there's not really satisfying answers for all of them. There's lots of interesting, kind of cool stories, but everyone's like, we're just going to go with the ones that we think make the most sense to us. And you and I are going to declare on the Watch Your Mouth podcast that these are the official origins of these phrases. We're going to do that.
Cool.
I've just decided that.
I do like 10 minutes into a podcast declaring that it will be unsatisfying.
Well, you got to bait them in first. You got to hook them and then you got to tell them. You can't start with that or no one would listen. We would lose all 11 listeners. That's our estimated audience size. Tell your friends, please, for the love of God. Anyway, so the Dunkirk Observer Journal goes on to say that boodle, again, just to remind you that it originally meant bunch or bundle. It came to mean a pile of winnings when gambling.
Oh, okay.
And this is where we get the phrase, he lost his boodle. And I think we should bring that back. And Milo, here's my challenge for you. Mm-hmm. You hear the phrase, I lost my boodle, and I want you to say that in whatever accent comes to mind.
I lost my boodle.
that works.
Russian tends to be my go-to. I was lecturing my partner the other day about the way, certain way that my roommate replaces the toilet paper, and for some reason I did it in a Russian accent. He was just watching me like, what are you doing?
Can you replay a little bit of that, how you said that to your partner? Please do.
My Russian accent is slipping already, so I apologize. Because okay. It wasn't okay. Good to begin with, but she takes the roll. She places it on top of the exposed roll. So the empty roll on the loop. And then on top, she placed the other roll. It's just sitting there on its side. It's a facsimile of using toilet paper. Yeah. So.
And so I did not know that you did this. Do you randomly break out into accents to explain things just because it somehow the muse strikes you?
Yeah, not a lot, but that's definitely something I get from you.
Yeah, I was afraid you had not remembered that I do that. It takes people aback sometimes when all of a sudden a Scotsman is explaining. I don't do that with customers. I do that with coworkers. So I'm only alarming people that know me, just so you know. All right. So before we move on, there are other versions of the whole kit and caboodle. And this is from the website phrases.org.uk, which we use a lot.
We do love them.
There is Sinclair Lewis used a version in his novel Main Street from 1920, which is the whole kit and boilin or bilin, the whole kit and bilin. Great, great line here. And some of these college professors are just about as bad. The whole kit and bilin of them are nothing in God's world but socialism in disguise.
Oh, okay.
How's that? And then we have from Jane Neal's Down Easters in 1833, the whole or hool. WHOOL, the whole boodle. I knew you'd like that.
Hula boodle. It's very Swedish chef.
We just lost all our Swedish listeners. Sorry.
Blame the Muppets.
Yeah, that's true.
The only exposure to Swedish culture I ever had as a child.
That and Swedish meatballs. That's all we had in IKEA. That's all we had. We're sorry. It's so limited. Anyway, from Jane Neal. This is a quote from the whole boodle, and I want to give you an example. I know a feller t'would whoop the whole boodle of him and give him six.
I didn't parse a single word of that.
I was doing my Jeff Bridges grumbly cowboy voice. I know a feller who'd whoop the whole boodle of him and give him six. That's my Jeff Bridges.
I think he spent the entirety of that one cowboy movie not actually reading from any script, but just making sounds and seeing how long he could get away with not doing his homework.
It was fantastic. It was True Grit was the movie.
Thank you. Yes, True Grit.
And we just watched part of it a few weeks back, and the grumbly, mumbly cowboy Jeff Bridges is an American treasure, and I would fight anyone who would disagree. So anyway, Jay Neal's Downeasters, let me say it more intelligibly. I know a feller twould whip the whole boodle of them and give them six.
Still not getting it, but okay, good effort.
From the Bangor Daily Whig and Courier, May 1839, a whole squad have got to permit to see you. Who are they? I don't know, a whole boodle of them. Also a good one. And last but not least, from the Ohio State Journal in 1848, an example of using the whole caboodle. The whole caboodle will act upon the recommendation of the Ohio Sun. And then the last usage of the whole kit and caboodle, Syracuse Sunday Standard, New York, 1884. More audiences have been disappointed by him and by the whole kit and caboodle of his rivals.
Oh.
That was spoken of me back in 1884 before I was ever born.
Harsh words.
I've been disappointing people since 1884. That's right.
That is impressive.
So you might think, Milo, you might think that there was a progression, like an evolution of the phrase. It's, you know, to get to the whole kit and caboodle would be like the evolutionary product of that, the end result. But no, all of those phrases were used interchangeably in the late 1800s.
Okay.
So, and somehow the whole kit and caboodle kind of survived because all those other things, the whole boodle, which we should use, and some of the other phrases, we don't. They just died, and who knows why, but they're not around anymore.
I'm going to make a country slow jams album called Caboodle Canoodling.
Oh, can you give us a sort of a sample, please?
I certainly cannot.
Come on now. I'm gonna want to, what was the name of your album?
Caboodle Canoodle.
Could we caboodle and canoodle while we eat some strudel?
Great. Perfect.
Yeah, we lost more listeners now. All right. Next up.
I got my mandolin shebang. Back there. I'll play along.
Well, I would like that. Maybe maybe we should do at the end as a bonus, let's do a version of caboodle and noodle. I'll just make it up as you go along. You strum, I'll sing.
Perfect.
Right, sorry. Let's go to, can we move on? Can we please move on now?
Probably a good idea.
We've dillied and dallied too long with that. We are now going to the next one, which is the whole shebang. This one shebangs, is even
shebangs.
Thank you. That was great. I appreciate that little interjection.
I think that's an actual song. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And it was sang famously by William Hung on American Idol in the debut sessions, in the audition sessions. And it was, I'm sorry, William Hung's probably listening, but I'm sorry, but it was awful. It was terrible.
I think intentionally so.
Widely mocked and ridiculed.
Yes.
This one's maybe even more confusing. Kit and Caboodle's pretty cut and dried. We pretty much know where that comes from. So I kind of lied. That one we do know. The rest are kind of fuzzy. So as I said, there's a few different thoughts about where the whole shebang came from. We do not know the exact origin, but it seems like we can go down two different paths. This is either probably a corruption of a French word or an Irish word.
Okay.
And we're gonna get into that more in a second. While we don't know exactly where this originated, we do know when it started to be used and when it became very popularized. It became popular during the American Civil War. One of the first times, or probably the very first time, that the whole shebang certainly was found in print was in 1872. Again, thanks to phrases.org.uk. It was in the Sedalia Daily Democrat. And I quote from them. But I'm going to burp first. Well, the democracy can flax the whole shebang, and we hope to see our party united.
That is much earlier than I thought it would be, as a side note, but go on.
Yeah, I know, right? So
that's wild.
So in 1872, they're using shebang a bit. And the democracy can flax up the democracy can flax the whole shebang is quite a sentence. And flax means to beat up, which I did not know. So So we also see that there in the 1860s, there is a mention of a French word, charabanc, which means a carriage with benches. Charabancs were known, I'm probably saying that wrong. I have a wife who's a French professor. I'm sorry. I asked her, but I don't remember. So how do you think it would say it's C-H-R, A with a mark over it, and then B-A-N-C-S. How do you think you'd say?
That was a lot of letters. Hold on.
Charabanc. We're just going to go with that.
Okay.
So charabancs were also known as charas, and they were commonplace in Britain. From the introduction of horse-drawn examples in the early 1800s to as late as the 1970s. Early sightseeing buses in the UK were called charabanc when they're actually called charabang. They became, you go charabang, shebang. So
is that where Chitty Chitty Bang Bang comes from?
You know, it might. That actually might be where it comes from, which is kind of a evolution or corruption, depending if you're an optimist or a pessimist, of that French word for carriage with benches.
Wild.
And then we have our controversy. Again, much bloodshed over this controversy. The website, The Word Dictionary, tells us that shebang might stem from an Irish term shebeen, from the Irish sibeen, which means small mug, which first appeared in print in the late 18th century, and that meant an unlicensed tavern in a shed or even a rundown private house where liquor is illegally dispensed.
Okay.
And then later in the 19th century America, shebang would mean a dive or a really, like, again, to that private, a rundown private house.
Interesting.
So what we do now, Milo, is we turn to our friend Mark Twain. And in his book, Roughing It, published in 1872, he does not clarify. He continues to confuse us as to the origins of shebang, because he's going to use shebang in both contexts. He says in one, he says, "Take back your money, madam. We can't allow it. You're welcome to ride here as long as you please, but this shebang's chartered and we can't let you pay a cent." Now, clearly, he's talking about a carriage there. And then later he says this, "We've got a shebang fixed up for you to stand behind in number one's house."
Hmm.
Now, clearly that's referring to a rundown home.
Interesting.
So Mark is not being helpful.
I mean, words can mean more than one thing, which is nice.
Oh, for sure. But it's not that they can't mean more than one thing. It points to the origin of the phrase. And is it the French word or is it the Irish word that or is it been mashed together? We don't know.
Could be.
But if we look for a little more evidence, and this is where I kind of land, is when we talk about where this phrase originated or at least started being popularized was in the Civil War. When soldiers in the Civil War were referring to this, they were talking about a hut, a shed, or one's living quarters.
Okay.
And it was at first a temporary shelters for soldiers in the field, but later came to mean any crude or makeshift dwelling. So I kind of think it might be these two words kind of got smashed together.
Quite possibly, because it's hard to know too, because they could have been taking shelter in like the vehicles and that could have been the original crude thing. So, and then evolved from that, but it could also just be referring to how it's kind of like shoddy accommodations, like the bad inns would be. So hard to say.
And we also know, as we are getting into the late 1800s, the ability to travel between countries is becoming, you know, more easier. It's becoming more and more people are doing it. Ship travel is becoming a bit safer. And so that means you have a lot of influx. Obviously, we know this in the late 1800s, early 1900s, especially of people coming over from other countries into America. And so a lot of other languages now are starting to mix with English. And some of that slang is now being introduced into, you know, what was then modern day English. So yeah, maybe they just, but again, it's fascinating to me, like somehow this word shebang, which you use now as a 20 something person here in 2021, that's survived all that time, where of course, you know, many, many hundreds of words have not survived and have fallen by the wayside. On to the next one.
Okay.
This is the one that has quite a wide variety. And this is the one that this is the most confusing because people don't know. They don't know where they came from, but there's some interesting stories on where they came up with the phrase, the whole ball of wax.
Don't like it. I'll tell you, you that right now. Don't like that phrase? Don't like it.
Can you tell me why?
Gross.
Well, what are you thinking? Earwax?
Yes.
Is that where your mind went?
Yes, because I don't think of candle wax as coming in balls.
But Well, do you see earwaxes coming in balls? Do you see
earwax? If you go to the doctor and they do an earwax extraction, it comes out in little balls. So that's what I think about.
Do you keep them?
No, not anymore. Not after the fire.
Not anymore. The fire. What are you talking about? Oh my goodness.
I'm making things up, listener.
I should have never let you move to Texas. That's probably where it all happened. All right. So the whole ball of wax, again, there's a few stories that are most likely made up and a couple of assumptions. And special bonus for this one, I learned a new word. All right. Story one. We'll see how you like this one. In the Morris Dictionary of Word and Phrase Origins, written by William and Mary Morris, they quote an English legal text from 1620, which describes the allocation of land among the heirs to an estate by a process very much like a lottery. Each parcel of land was listed on its own piece of paper, sealed inside a small ball of wax and placed in a hat. Each heir then pulled out one of the balls to discover which part was his. That's the story of one. They said this is where the term a whole ball of wax comes from.
I'm really glad it's not earwax.
Me too. That makes it a much grosser story. I have a problem with this story, as did the people.
It sounds really fake.
It sounds really fake. And if this started in 1620, the important piece of information here is we don't see this in print again until the 1880s.
It's not great.
So you're asking me to believe that this phrase took 260 years to find its way into print, and people were saying it back in 1620, and now all of a sudden in the late 1800s, now people are using it, and now it's found its way into print.
Sounds a little sketchy.
We have done dozens and dozens of idioms, and that's just not how this works. Mm-hmm. It's being used and it's popularized, it's going to find its way into print probably within a matter of at least a decade or less, maybe a couple decades at the most, before somebody picks it up and prints it because it's going to make them sound hip and cool. So, and you got to remember, in this story, this is in England. This is not an English phrase. This is an American phrase again. The whole ball of wax. So can you give me a good reject noise or a strike noise like a Family Feud?
Bow, 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 bow.
Or no.
Oh, that works too.
We reject it. But I like the Price is Right thing too. Are you ready for story two?
I'm ready for story two.
This comes from typesetting. In the days when type was made of metal, small pieces of gold would flake off the typesetting equipment. The typesetter would collect the gold flakes in a ball of wax to later melt down and reclaim the gold. Very often, someone would make off with a whole ball of wax. Do you believe
this? Why were they making them out of gold? There's so many better metals. Like, it's not a solid, it's very soft. You wouldn't make machinery out of it.
Yeah, especially one that's going to come in contact with something over and over again, like if you were printing something like a newspaper or a flyer, you're not going to make it out of it. It's too expensive and it's too soft. It's completely,
no darn sense.
You're going to go out of business. That type of a typesetter, you're going to be bankrupt.
Don't like that one.
No, I don't buy it either. So assumptions, I saw something about that they said maybe it was referring to the moon being full.
Okay.
It's waxing. The moon is waxing. Sure. It's the whole ball of wax. No evidence. Do I have any evidence for this? No, sir. No, Your Honor, I do not. But I saw it out there. And I thought it was kind of and there was a little cartoon of a caveman motioning to a full moon and saying something about the full ball of wax.
So they're postulating that it goes back that far.
Sure, why not? It could also mean collect wax drippings from a candle and rolling them into a ball to be used later.
Sure, that one seems more likely than any of the others.
Or Maybe you like this one. It's from shoemakers who, I didn't know this, and apparently this is true. Shoemakers who apparently use wax when they make shoes. You like that one?
What do they use the wax for?
I don't know. Something in making the shoes. They're cobblers. I don't know. Their ways are mysterious.
Okay.
No one knows for sure. I don't know. Don't send us angry emails. Or you know what? Send us emails. We don't really get many. So send them anyway, even if they're angry. This is my favorite of the assumptions is there. It says there again, it's just a post on Reddit or something. So I'm really reaching here. It said that there was an old custom where people would make wax imprints of themselves before they died.
Yeah.
And larger people needed the whole ball of wax. They needed all of it. She's shaking her head in
bobbling my head.
She's like a bobblehead here.
Yeah. I don't know.
You like that one?
I don't know why that would turn into an idiom, though, because it's not something you're doing all the time. It's not like something that's really at the front of people's.
Well, maybe if you were in funerals and you were like a mortician, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Morticians usually aren't the linguistic trendsetters of the world.
Well, maybe they should be. And then I found, again, proclaimed confidently this last explanation. So these dictionaries claimed that this phrase is a mondegreen.
I did not know this word before.
I know, but I didn't remember what it was. And I feel like even though I heard it before, I didn't remember what it was. A mondegreen, for those of you who didn't know, like me, is a word that that you didn't know. A mondegreen is a misunderstood or misinterpreted word or phrase resulting from a mishearing of the lyrics of a song, something like that. Mm-hmm. That's kind of basically a mondegreen. I know you've mentioned it before. I did not remember.
I believe we had an episode on them, actually. I'll post it in the show notes.
We had a whole episode.
I believe we did. Because we had like a quiz of, is it this thing or is it this thing? Is it champing at the bit or chomping at the bit and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. And I want to do more. I wanted to do another whole episode of those.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
Yeah, I want to do more. All right. So these dictionaries proudly and confidently stated that the whole ball of wax comes from the whole bailiwick, meaning the whole territory. So they're saying it's a corrupted form of bailiwick, which is in a medieval administrative area in charge of a bailiff. The word bailiwick could be used to mean someone's sphere of influence or interest. So the bailiwick's entire sphere of influence, wick coming from candles and candles being made from wax, it's just a corruption of the whole bailiwick. It's the whole area, it's the whole ball of wax. How do you like that one?
We run into the issue where this is an American phrase that came into prominence long after the medieval age.
You got it.
So it seems a little sus.
Well, I don't, this is really the most extreme time in this whole, the whole life of this podcast. If I'm very dissatisfied with all of the answers I've heard, I don't believe any of them.
No, I don't think
maybe the people roll in the ball of wax to save wax, but that, why would you keep honestly it in a ball?
Is like the only thing I can think of that it had any truth sound to it.
Do you have any candles that are, I mean, I know they can make candles in the shape of balls, obviously, but that's not normally the shape candles are in.
No, but I don't think they're saying that you make ball candles. You just, while the wax is still soft coming off the candle, you just peel it off and you store it in a ball until you can melt it down to make a new candle.
I used to do that with masking tape. I had a ball of masking tape that I would just, when I worked at this bank and I was there for years, I would just keep adding to it.
I think you had a rubber band ball at our house for a while too.
Probably. Those are fun. Yeah. Okay. Do we have time for one more? Do you think we can do one more?
I think probably, yeah.
Okay. So as you mentioned, and some of you are probably excited for this, we go to the last one, the Full Monty.
Yes. Which to me has some naughty connotations, I feel like.
again with the naughty. It's a little naughty.
Am I wrong? Is there, for no, some reason, not. The Full Monty sounds like nudity to me. Like that's what it connotes. But anyway,
do you remember that there was and you would have been a very young child, but there was a movie that came out in 1997 called The Full Monty.
It rings a bell.
So it was basically a very summarized plot. These guys, and I believe I'm pretty positive it was in England. This one guy specifically was down on his luck, behind on child support, lost his job, decided to basically become his own male stripper service, and then recruited some of the guys he worked with. And part of their whole thing was they would become fully naked. They would go the full Monty. And that would meant they'd fully strip. So you're right.
Hey.
You're 100% right in what you're remembering.
Delightful.
Yeah, and so the strange thing about this phrase is it's recent.
Okay.
This, based on what I was able to tell, this phrase did not appear in print until the late 70s or even the early 80s. Yeah, this is recent. But we've got some ideas on where this comes from, but we're going to run into the same problem as we bumped into before. These are older examples, and we're not seeing it in print until, I would say fairly recently, in the last 40, maybe 50 years or so. One last note on the movie. It does have a 96% score on Rotten Tomatoes. So it is
pretty good.
It was a highly regarded movie. So we have three different ideas of where the full Monty comes from. Number one, the term Monty, and this is true, it is used in a few different card games that involve gambling. Mm-hmm. And apparently there's a specific Spanish card game. It's spelled differently because the Monty has an E at the end instead of a Y.
Okay.
And the spelling of Monty is actually a French word, which means to mount or to get on.
Mm-hmm.
And the Monty was kind of like the stack of cards, apparently. So like the full Monty, that's one option.
Okay.
It refers back to this card game. Number two, I like this story. This is a good one. There is a well-known field marshal in England, and any of our English listeners would know that, I'm pretty sure if you know English history at all, is a man named Bernard Law Montgomery.
Oh.
He was a field marshal, and that's the highest rank in the British Army. That's the highest rank you can get in the British Army ever since 1736. Bernard Law Montgomery fought in both world wars, and his full title, this is fancy, you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Field Marshal Bernard Law Montgomery, 1st Viscount Montgomery of Alamein.
Fancy.
It's very fancy. I like it. There's two different versions from that. The full Monty came from Mr. Montgomery, the 1st Viscount Montgomery of Alamein. The first one is that he liked to have a full breakfast even on the morning of campaigns. So the full breakfast would be the full Monty because he, if at all possible, he was going to have a full breakfast. So it's theorized that they started to call that the full Monty, meaning all of it.
Okay.
The other explanation is relating to Bernie is that he would often wear his full set of medals.
Okay.
So he had a bunch of medals because he's the highest rank, a lot of medals. So he would very frequently wear all of his medals or the full Monty. Hmm. But he lived from 1887 to 1976. So kind of gets us there, but he lived to be pretty old. And I don't know. I would think that phrase would have been something that would have started being used during the World Wars. Mm-hmm. So we're talking, obviously quite a ways before that. So my favorite explanation, I like this one the most. I don't know why. In 1904, Sir Montague Burton opened a tailoring shop in Chesterfield, Derbyshire.
I like that name.
Isn't that nice? The business flourished, and he began opening a chain of shops in 1906. And this business went on to become the world's largest bespoke tailoring service.
Wow.
I also did not know what the word bespoke meant, and now I do. It just means custom.
Mm-hmm.
And so his name was well known. And apparently getting a full suit, a full three-piece suit, was called the full Monty.
Oh, okay.
And we apparently, that was a thing that they called that back in the early 1900s. You went in and you ordered the full Monty. That was the full suit. But again, we're talking early 1900s, mm-hmm. and we don't see this in print until, 70-some years later. So I don't know. I don't know why it would take that long, but those are your three explanations. Which one do you like the best?
I think the suit one does sound the most reasonable, but given that the military guy died around the time that it started gaining prominence. That timeline seems to make more sense, but hard to say. They all seem a little bit half-baked.
They do a little bit. And you start, when we've done as many of these as you and I have, I think you do start to get a little bit of a sense of, this doesn't sound quite right. It sounds a little bit too perfect, a little too made up. Somebody, again, kind of mythical almost, I guess.
Right.
Or like an urban legend.
Most of the stories that ring of truth aren't neat and tidy.
Yeah, exactly. There's kind of a weird twist, which is some of the best episodes I've had, that we've had, I think, are those ones that are like, who knew that this got here from that? Like, yeah, okay, go figure. But when someone makes up a story, it's got to be believable, or everyone will be like, no, that doesn't make sense.
Right.
So you start to get a nose for that. And as you brought up, we don't have time to do another one, but the whole nine yards has a number of different thoughts as well. I thought that was just relating to football, American football, but it apparently is not. There's a lot of different explanations. We may do that one later. Okay. So again, a little bit different style of an episode for me anyway, to go over a bunch of phrases that mean the same thing. What stood out to you?
Boodle.
Yeah. How is that not surprising?
You told me a funny word and explained where it came from. I have no other joy.
you need other sources of joy. We, just saying that. If we could bring back the word boodle, I think that would be good. And we could trace it right back here to the Watch Your Mouth podcast.
Yeah, maybe we can. That'll be our next shirt.
I have a couple already. If you want some merch, let us know. But what stood out to me is I really did like, I liked the full Monty. I think that was kind of a fun little one with the general. I'm like, okay, that sounds a little too convenient, but there's a lot of information on that field marshal.
Yeah. Which is kind of interesting. It's nice when we get characters.
We like characters and we like good names.
Yep.
But that's it. That's what I've got for you this week. And I hope you all enjoyed it.
Yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. We appreciate you being here. And if you liked it, we would love if you leave us a review on your listening platform of choice or on Facebook. You can look up our Facebook group, leave a review there and join the community there. There's some fun people in there and we post pictures and episode updates and all that lovely stuff. So hop on over there. You can also email us at watchyourmouthpod if you would like. If you have questions, comments, corrections, that kind of thing, we would love to hear from you. And thank you to Tony Gephardt for our theme song. And congratulations to him because he just got engaged. Yay!
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 Good job, Tony. He was thinking about redoing our theme song, and I'm like, I don't know. I think it's the best part of our show.
Yeah, no, I love our theme song.
it's really good.
That's sweet of him, though. Yeah. But yeah, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We will see you again soon. But in the meantime, I'm Milo.
And I'm Dave.
Stay curious and carry a hatchet.
Some food, it'll be real good. I don't know what I'm singing here, but here we go. It's part of the show. But don't you know? We gotta go. But if you get a chance, I'd like to caboodle while we noodle with your boodle and your poodle eating noodles. I don't have any other words that rhyme that I can think of. Boodle.
That's beautiful.
It wasn't. It was terrible, but I know and I own it.
I've never heard eating strudel as an innuendo before, but I never want to hear it again.